Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to another early edition, early for us anyway, of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, the Rally fan, and the team is all here. We have senior staff writer from Dirtfish.com, David Evans. We've got the man they call the voice of rally, Colin Clark, and our former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson. All in attendance. It's the beginning of May. It feels like winter in the UK, but we're gearing up for Portugal whilst looking at some very interesting headlines in the world of WRC. Morning, lads.
Morning. Good morning, Lisa. Everything well and happy this early hour in the morning?
It's cold. This time last year, I kind of remember having the door open because it was too warm to record in my cabin in the garden. I call it cabin, garden shed, obviously.
Studio.
But it doesn't feel like May. The May blossoms out. The apple blossom looks amazing, but yeah, it's cold.
We've got a proper frost this morning. Everything's frost. And when it's not frosty, it's blowing an easterly or a northerly, and it's cold. It's been cold for 3 weeks now.
You had any snow, George?
Yeah, massive amount of snow on Sunday and Monday.
Massive, George. Wow. Massive.
I drove down from Braemar, from actually Aberdeen via Braemar on Sunday, just for a nice drive. And it then rained here all Monday, Sunday night and Monday. We got about 14, 15 millimetres of rainfall. It was 22 millimetres of rainfall we got on Monday. And it was 3 degrees. So I'm at 300 feet where we are, and up on the top of Glenshee is nearly 2,000 feet. So it's about 5 or 6 degrees cooler. Of course, it was fell as snow. They had a couple of feet of snow up there. It's massive. The hills are complete.
A couple of feet of snow.
Wow. Colin.
That's a proper dump.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You raised the discussion about Braemar. Sorry, I was just actually reading something. Might need to change that bit. Sorry.
I will. I'll definitely take it out, David. Absolutely, definitely take it out.
I'm sure you're. I was just reading something. Sorry, but George, when you were talking about Braemar there, that given that we have started the podcast and not dived immediately into the most important news of the day, I have a little bit of a story about Braemar. You know, when you were coming down from Aberdeen and down through Braemar, that's the road that goes between the sort of ski stations, and it's the most amazing road, isn't it? It drops down the valley, and then you can see it going up the other side, and it goes on for, you can probably see the road for a couple of miles, but
That's the bit from Slough down towards Braemar.
So you're
coming there, yeah.
So here's the thing. If you had the choice of car to drive down that bit of road, a Porsche 911 Turbo 997 would be a pretty good choice, wouldn't it?
It would be pretty stunning, yeah.
It would. And it was...
Was it, David?
I think it was around early October. We were there just after daybreak, so nobody around. And there was myself and a photographer, Drew Gibson. We'd set out on this most amazing road trip. We were retracing the entire route of the 1960 RAC rally. So we'd borrowed this Porsche off Porsche, obviously, started in Blackpool, and we'd gone right up to the top, all the way up to Ullapool and all around Scotland, around Gaelock and all of that. We'd followed it religiously. So we'd slept in a car, we'd done all of this stuff, we'd sort of slept in hotels while we were saying we were sleeping in the car, obviously. And we'd come down to Tomintoul, And we'd spent the night.
Tom and Tool.
Actually, we didn't sleep in Tom and Tool. We slept in Inverness, and the really old hotel outside of Inverness that used to be always used on the RAC. I can't remember its name. The Hydro.
It could have been the Hydro.
And we left the Hydro dead early in the morning, both of us quite confident that we would happen upon a filling station between
Massive mistake.
So we arrived at the top of that hill, looking down that awesome valley and just ready to give it the beans in this 911 with the petrol light on. And we had to roll. We had to stick it in neutral and roll all the way down that hill because we've got no petrol.
Did you get to Bryn Mawr or Ballater? What did you try for?
I can't remember now. Yeah.
But Ballater would have been closer.
But regardless, the most enormous disappointment at being given this. It's like Picasso being given a blank canvas and no pencils, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Pens. Well, it sort of is. However, unlike Picasso, his bit of blank paper wouldn't kill you, and that road would. You've mentioned about this massive downhill, and then just a couple of sweeping corners, and then a few crests, and then more. There are couple of switchback corners in there. Yeah. So this massive, wide, fast-flowing road where you could cruise along at ridiculously high speeds. I mean, you know, you could easily be doing 140, 150 miles an hour on some of those roads if you wanted to be.
But you wouldn't.
Well, obviously I wouldn't, but if you wanted to, that's the sort of road it is. Incredible road. And then all of a sudden you get very narrow bits and you get these lovely long crests, lovely long corner. It tightens and tightens and tightens and tightens and tightens, and it tightens to something ridiculous. And anybody coming down there in a Porsche a little bit quick, and the car's starting to go light, you press
slightly lacking in talent.
They're not gonna grip, and all of a sudden you're making you've made the worst and actually the last mistake of your life.
Well, I can say that petrol light saved your life.
So now we will
jump in now to the
but just pressing matters. Before we do, Lise, actually two more very, very quick stories about that same bit of road. First, that's the first place I ever saw a golden eagle. And second place, just further, I think it must have been just past Bryn Mawr, we passed Kate Middleton and what's her name? William? Harry? William.
Yeah,
William.
It's very, very close William. To Balmoral, yeah. isn't it?
Yeah,
did William. Did you give him a lift?
No, they were in a fleet of Range Rovers coming in the opposite direction. Very exciting. An exciting bit of road. And actually, what we'll do is we'll tweet a picture and we'll even Instagram a picture of Porsche. Yes, going very slowly down that lovely bit of road.
Okay.
Can't believe you stuck.
I can't wait to see the best part of that story.
For the cognoscenti amongst our listenership, if you do want to drive that road, any evening in summer, you'll hardly come across a vehicle. Basically, you'll hardly come across a vehicle.
And if you do, it's probably Kate Middleton driving a Range Rover.
If you do, yeah. But also if you have a... If you have a GPS on 3D image up on the dashboard, the GPS mapping for that area is pretty good. It'll tell you it'll point out the killer corners before you come to it. So you use your little GPS as a navigator. Stops you making the
who's fiddling papers in the background or opening.
That's me. Actually, but it is for a very good reason. Because what I'm doing now is I'm now
there
looking
can't be
for,
any good reasons.
There is. I'm looking for the CD with those bloody pictures on.
Right. Okay. Save that for later,
well,
David.
We'll save that for later because we're on time schedule here and we haven't got to anything exciting.
I have actually just to come back to that. I've got so much to do today. Because while we were doing the intro, I was actually going through my diary and copying out everything that was in my diary for yesterday. I've just copied over to today. Simply because yesterday was totally taken over by Oit Tanak and Thierry Neuville. See?
Oh, seamless. A nice segue. Lovely segue. They have pledged their future to Hyundai. Discuss.
David, was that a surprise to you? Because I clearly we knew they were discussing. Clearly we knew that Tanak and Neuville, there was a very, very good chance that they would renew their contracts. But for me, for it to come so early in the season, was a real, real surprise. I thought there was a good chance that at least one of those two would be in reasonably involved discussions with M Sport. I was quite taken by surprise by it all.
I was surprised at the timing, like you, Colin. It did come early, but only because, you know, traditionally and historically, we're used to looking around the summer, around Finland time. You know, I wrote a column yesterday saying it always used to be Evascula and Rally Finland, where you'd start to talk about contracts and what have you. But equally, talking to a couple of people in the Tanak camp, I was directed back to 2019. And the first time that Tanak mentioned to us, to me, about, you know, the fact that he wanted to get his deal done early. Oit Tanak is a man who likes to understand where he's going in his future and a very, very early in the season. This year is more important than ever for the drivers to know where they're going and where they're going to be, because they sort of need to get as much development seat time, testing time with the new generation of cars.
Yeah.
So,
very good, you know, point, David. Yeah.
For Tanak to say, yep, staying at Hyundai, that's him sorted. So for the next 6 months, he knows he can have significant influence on the direction of the car and what have you for next year. So I was, like you, Cole, I was very surprised at the timing that it came so quickly. And, you know, I hadn't even started really asking the question. I'd spoken to Malcolm, of course, Malcolm Wilson. We'd written a story saying that Malcolm Wilson would like to get Tanak back. That didn't happen. I did, like you, think that, you know, if it's not Tanak, I thought that perhaps Neville could go back to M Sport after, of course, he had that season there in 2013. The fact that they're both committed, I think, demonstrates the commitment, the wherewithal that Hyundai Motorsport has moving forward.
Do you know what I see from all this, guys, is a massive opportunity for one of the young drivers to actually, you know, for someone to take it, put a banker on one of the young drivers that have come up and been discarded, but they're still hovering around. Very, very talented. And they just need, you know, you come up, you get a victory, you get close to many victories, and then you seem to fade away a little bit. Now, that's not real. That's not real. You know, we've got two or three Esa-Pekka. Where's Esa-Pekka?
There's three or four. There's three or four.
So there's a great chance for all those guys, I think.
It's my issue.
There's a lot of experience in some of them. If you think any of them have got that last little bit of determination.
Who's not had the chance, George? Who's not had the chance to prove themselves? There's a big issue here for M Sport, because, you know, I've always categorized the drivers into at least two groups. You could argue there's maybe three groups, but there's what I call the elite drivers who are fighting for the championship and who could win any rally. They go to every rally with the intention to win. And right now, there is Neuville, there's Tanak, there is probably, well, there's definitely for next season, Elvin Evans. He would put Kallio-Rovanperä and Perra into that group. Where do you look beyond that? You know, there's Ogier, obviously, this year, but you know, is he around next year? Chances are he's not. But beyond those four drivers, who are we looking at?
I wouldn't write off Sunonen and Esa-Pekka, but not for everything. They've not got that breadth of...
I don't write them off, George, but... Uh-huh. M Sport need more than that. M Sport needs someone, because, you know, what we've seen with M Sport, and we saw it in 2017. Okay, they had Ogier in the car, but, you know, they are very, very capable. And you'd almost say they are probably in the best position to come out, you know, flying with a car. You know, they will make a car that's capable of winning, but it's only capable of winning if it's got a driver in it who can make it win. And I think they've got a huge problem now. I don't think that's an overstatement, David.
But no, it's not. But who's to say that they don't buy Elvin Evans back?
No, I don't. I think is absolutely fanciful thinking. I think the chances of that are practically zero. Practically zero.
Why?
Evans, A, because Toyota have got an issue as well. Toyota ain't going to let him go. If Toyota let him go, they've got a massive problem.
So the only way Toyota will keep him is if they offer him more. Well, who knows if they offer him.
But money talks, and we know that money talks. And Elvin Evans is in a remarkably good position with Toyota. He's comfortable in the team. It's a very different dynamic for Evans in Toyota from the dynamic we saw at M Sport. He is still maturing as a driver with Toyota. They will give him the car They'll give him the budget. They'll give him the commitment. Evans is going nowhere. He is going nowhere.
For me, Elvin Evans is the prime mover now in what's a much kind of more condensed, silly season of driver market moves. He's the one. He's the only one that can really decide, yeah, you know, I can go there as a team leader or I can go there as a team leader. You know, we spoke to Yari Matti earlier in the week and I asked him, do you consider Elvin Evans to be a team leader? Yes, I do. So
do you know the bizarre thing, David? You know, if Yari Matti hadn't taken that job, we'd be talking about Yari Matti as probably the favourite to take that M Sport seat. Well, I think almost without any question, because you know, we have mentioned
maybe
the number.
Maybe it's not too late, Cole. Maybe we should get him back on the phone and say, been your team principal.
No, but
get back in the car.
But it shows the situation we're in. George mentions drivers that have been there. You know, there's clearly Lappi, there's clearly Sunanen, there's Osberg. You might go to Osberg. There's Craig Breen. There is Andreas Mikkelsen. I think Andreas Mikkelsen is probably the man who will head up M Sport. And let's not forget Hayden Paddon. Hayden Paddon is as good a driver now as he ever was, and he was an exceptional driver
as we've discussed. Sorry to jump in again, Cole.
That's right.
Enormous apologies for that.
No, but Paddon, he's got the green credentials.
Absolutely, Lee. You know, we've talked about his ability to drive these electric cars, and increasingly, as we spoke to Matthew Wilson last week, who's done an awful lot of mileage in the actual hybrid car with all of the bits on it, there is a real different way of driving them now. You know, you've got to work with the regen, you've got to do all of this other stuff that Paddon, it'll be second nature to him because he spent so long developing his own Kona EV, hasn't he?
Yeah, but the problem Paddon's got and all of those other drivers I just mentioned is that none of them have got regular seat time. And what we've seen with Craig Breen is massively talented. Mm. And in certain circumstances, on certain surfaces, you know, the likes of obviously Rovaniemi, and then we go back to Estonia last year, it is possible. It is possible with an uber-talented driver to jump into one of these cars and to get a result. But it's going to take, particularly on tarmac, it's going to take time. And none of those drivers have got seat time. None of them have got the seat time required at the top level. As I say, I don't think it's too much to say that it's a bit of a crisis for M Sport with a driver, a bit of a crisis.
Oh. I think Paddon, of all the drivers you've mentioned, obviously Craig Breen is still producing that level of consistent result with flashes of real proper brilliance, you know, proper WRC winner brilliance. So definitely still worth a punt, as Hyundai are demonstrating, both in faith and Craig is returning in performances. But I think Paddon's still an interesting bet.
I'm going to make a prediction. I think we will see Andreas Mikkelsen investing in the next four or five rallies, and he'll do maybe three or four of them in a World Rally car, because Mikkelsen knows this is an opportunity. And as you rightly say, David, whoever gets that lead drive at M Sport next year, and listen, they might surprise us all. Adrian Formoe might turn out to be the next Robin Perra, the next Oliver Solberg. That's possible. You know, then he's a season too early to lead the team. But then you have someone you know can potentially win rallies on a regular basis. But I think Mikkelsen is the man, and I think Mikkelsen will invest in two, three, four maybe runs in a World Rally car before the end of the year. And he will be the man, because I just don't see anyone else that's got the potential to win regularly.
Andreas has made it clear that his intention with his WRC2 program is that he will do the first six rounds. So that's up to Safari. And then he'll wait. He essentially gets his WRC2 program out of the way. Obviously, he's got his seventh round. He'll just sit and wait. He'll have that seventh round floating so that he can see who's doing what with the championship, who's going where. Because obviously with WRC2, all of the rounds count, but you just have to nominate. I think you nominate seven, you score on six. So he's got that TalkSport Skoda program. But that does, it really frees him up for the second half of the season. You know, there's potentially five events there that he can go and do in a World Rally car. And as he's said before, you know, he does have the money. He's got the cash ready for the investment. And of course, M Sport has a car ready and waiting, quite possibly with his name on. And there are events. You look to this, the Spain in the second half of the year, he's won there. You know, he's won you know, plenty of events, or he hasn't won plenty of events, but he's got great experience on all of those events, apart from Japan, and desperately racking my brains. No other events, no other new ones in the second half of the year, is there?
Well, not yet, anyway.
That's true. No, but I think you're right, Cole. You know, I think we will see him in a World Rally car, and it'll be very exciting to see, you know, what he can do. But there's that huge pool. You know, you've just listed all of them with the likes.
I didn't. I missed one out. Breen for me is another interesting one. I think Breen, the timing with Breen seems to be against him as always. You know, when Loeb came back into Hyundai, Breen more or less had a deal in principle, didn't he, to do more rounds that year. I think the emergence of Oliver Solberg
Padden lost out. I'd say Padden was a bigger loser to Loeb.
Yeah, he was. But here's one for you to consider. We talked about, or I talk about, these elite drivers. There was one that was amongst the elite and then dropped out and then spectacularly disappeared. Should we write off Chris Meek? Is Chris Meek a plausible option or not? He is a driver who can win any rally if his head's in the right place.
There is no doubt that Chris Meek, he remains one of the fastest drivers from A to B. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, he's natural talent and absolute ability. You know, he's got great experience of developing cars.
Exactly. George, would you take a chance on Meek? Because Meek, you know, I suppose it's reasonable to say that it's his attitude that's been questioned over the years. You know Malcolm Wilson well, George. Do you think that there is history between Meek and Wilson, and they've never had the easiest and the smoothest of relationships? But Malcolm Wilson is not one to shirk a challenge, is he, George?
No, he's not. But I don't think that's a great option myself. No.
Chris has been, you know, he's been away, he's done Dakar, he's mm-hmm. sort of seeing life from a different perspective now.
Yeah, he's maybe doing what he wants to do, yeah.
So who do we write off then, guys? I mean, and who do we put in the frame? You know, do we write Mads Osberg out of it? Is he one that we can say, no, that's not going to happen? Esa-Pekka Lappi, do we write him off? Or can he potentially step up?
I'll tell you what's interesting in that list of drivers you've got, because I keep forgetting that every year I'm getting older. we're talking about Mads Osberg and Andreas Mikkelsen. And, you know, not that long ago, they were the young drivers in the sport. They're now becoming older drivers, shall we say, very carefully. And you know, it is people like the Adrian Formo and the Oliver Solbergs that you're kind of looking at investment drivers, that if you're going to sign them up, you want to tie them down maybe to longer contracts. Yes, you've got the experience of the older drivers, but the cars are changing with the hybrid technology. Is it wiser to go for the younger drivers, or do the older drivers adapt better? You know, there's so many different permutations.
For Malcolm Wilson, there's no permutations. At least he needs a frontline driver. Ford has invested in developing that car alongside M Sport. Malcolm needs that car to come out of the box with somebody in it that's capable of winning Monte Carlo in January next year. End off.
That narrows the list, doesn't it?
It totally narrows the list, 100%.
It makes the list almost impossible.
Well, how about Ogier going back?
Ogier, George. That's another huge gamble.
He can't do Monte though, because he's doing Dakar, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's another huge gamble. You know, did Loeb have a fair crack at the whip at Hyundai? Well, you know, I think the Hyundai story is evolving. It's very much evolving in terms of that car on tarmac. You know, we have seen Mikkelsen in the car. We've seen Loeb in the car. We've seen Breen in the car. Tanak in the car on tarmac. All really struggling. The only guy that makes that car work is the guy that developed the car, which is Neuville. So maybe our view of Loeb in those 2 years with Hyundai is slightly tainted by that. Maybe he's still capable of winning. But the thing is, we're talking about Loeb and we're saying maybe. That for me is question mark enough. I just think it's a really difficult situation. The point you make, Lisa, about the young drivers being investment drivers, you're absolutely right. They are investment drivers. Mm. But you know, as David says, Malcolm doesn't need an investment driver. He's had enough of those over the years.
He does as a second driver, Cole.
Well, yeah, okay, but that's not the point. Second drivers, third drivers, we can argue all day about those. The most important thing after this week's announcement is the number one, and who can deliver the wins that, as you say, Malcolm has promised. You know, the car will be capable. There is absolutely no question the car will be capable of winning, only with the right driver.
The difficulty is, isn't it? You know, if you're Elvin Evans, if you're Calais Rovanperä, we think Calais has an option. I think Toyota has the option on him for next year. I'm sure Toyota will take up that option. So maybe Calais is out of the picture anyway. But, you know, if you're Elvin and you're sitting there, we know the kind of car that M Sport can engineer. You know, look at 2017 car. It came out. Ogier had but they had both championships sewn up in September. You know, that was how good that car was. And we've seen this in the last homologation cycle where M Sport hits the ground running quicker, faster than anybody else. Although Hyundai was quick with Thierry. You look back to Monty in Sweden in 17, he probably should have won both of those events. Across the spread of that season, it was the Fiesta that was the quickest car. Then what happened?
And the most reliable.
The most reliable. Everybody else sort of caught up a little bit, didn't they then? And then M Sport, unfortunately, didn't have the budget to continue the development of the car at the same speed that everybody else had. So therefore, while the Fiesta is still a car that can win, as we saw with Formo's pace in Croatia, perhaps the overall budget left them wanting a little bit in this sort of 18, because obviously he was still champion, 19, 20, and this year. So what do you do if you're Elvin Evans? You know that potentially you can go there in 2022 and you can have a car that's going to be the quickest out of the box. But then in years 2, 3, 4, you could struggle. Mm. For me, he will probably stay at Toyota where you are going to get a really strong car from Tom Fowler. And you've got the wherewithal to keep it going for the next, it's only a 3-year homologation cycle, isn't it, this one? So, a 3-year deal for Elvin would be a dream, really, from Toyota.
As more or less team leader, because I don't see Rovanperä. I think Toyota next year is almost settling in. I will be astonished if Evans leaves Toyota. It'll be Toyota with Evans leading, with Rovanperä as the number two, and I suspect Katsuta-san will be the number three driver, particularly if he continues with the form he's showing at the start of this year. I think that's a settled team, and I think that's a team that can win championships for them. I think it's a team that Evans will drive.
Going to stay?
No.
I think that's a discussion for further down the line, but I'm with you there, George. That was exactly what I was about to say, that, I think there is definitely potential that we'll see Ogier on a few rounds next year, but I take everything that you said there, Carl. I think, Toyota, they don't really nominate drivers, do they? So, all this talk of a team leader, Elvin, Calais and Taka-san and Ogier, they all get the same kit. They all get the same access to all of the same data and settings. But it's just that person at the top, isn't it, who sits in the debrief and opens the debrief. And you need somebody with vast experience. Elvin Evans has that. Calais doesn't. But I think you're quite right. It would be a very, very settled team and a very successful team to take them forward. And it would tick all of the boxes with Taka-san there as the Japanese driver and not, absolutely not a token driver.
No.
Two fastest times in Croatia. The boy is getting quicker and quicker.
Mm. No, I think that would be the situation. And I think, anything is possible. Anything's possible with Loeb. Anything's possible with Ogier. But, for Loeb to get back into the swing of things, he has to get involved, I think, this year. I don't think you can bring him in round two or round three, whatever it might be next year. You've got to get him involved this year. You've got to have him involved in the development of the car if you're M Sports.
But again, Cole, we've talked around the easy one there. That's just dawned on me. We've done the easy selection for Toyota. We haven't answered your central question. What does M Sport do?
Well, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to answer that and by trying to work out where the other drivers are going. And it's George, I am really, really struggling. Beyond Mikkelsen, it's a gamble. It's a massive gamble on any of the other drivers, on the Formos, the Lappies, the Sunanens. It's a massive gamble.
Well, even with Andreas Mikkelsen, and you hate almost saying some of the things you say about these drivers if you're being slightly negative. But let's not forget that Andreas had a couple of fairly poor years in the WRC. He almost looked spent. I don't think he's spent, but he looked spent. He did not get it together. To be fair, I think he did right at the end. He did get it together. He got out of that rut and he got himself back into the right place. And then he sort of lost the chance.
I think, George, that's why he needs to get in a Fiesta, because, you know, there's no doubt he struggled like hell in the Hyundai. He was quick in the Citroen, wasn't he? You know, we saw good times
in that
Citroen. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But
Hyundai, it just didn't work for him. Totally didn't work for him. And there's a driver that had been absolutely used to a car that fitted him, you know, like the glove on the hand in Volkswagen.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Andreas had the ability at that time to come out of Volkswagen and say, right, that's what I want from the car. And in fact, he wasn't in a position, was he? He was never in a position to go to a team and say, change it.
But maybe, you know, his time at Volkswagen, where he was effectively, you know, somebody had interpreted what he needed from the car, or the car just happened to suit him. He maybe didn't have the collateral to go and be able to explain and work with an engineer to get what he wanted. I'm sure he will be now. He'll be refocused like you can't believe. And going to somewhere like M Sport, what an incredible fit that would be. I could really see that working. I could really see him coming to the fore. I could really see M Sport enjoying working with him and you know, really nurturing him and bringing him on, as we know that M Sport can do. You know, they've done it in the past. So,
but the one thing we have to remember here is that, you know, at the top of this season, Andreas Mikkelsen sat us all down and said to us, watch this, I will dominate WRC2 this year. He won Monte Carlo and totally dominated it. He, you know, he was beaten comfortably, hard to say, but, you know, he was soundly beaten by Esa-Pekka Lappi in Finland. And then he's made a mistake in Croatia.
Yeah, I think that statement was somewhat naive, David. I'm not entirely sure he paid much attention to the quality in WRC2 over the last couple of years. You know,
and well, it evolved as well, didn't it, Carl? You know, we didn't know Lappi was coming then.
No,
and I think you're probably right. But
like Grisan have developed as drivers. Osberg, funnily enough, I think has developed as a driver.
Yeah,
I'm not sure where he would sit if you put him back in a World Rally car. But I think he's got better as a driver, an all-round driver.
And as a development driver, Cole.
That's exactly right. Exactly. That's my point. He spent a lot of time in R5 cars. I think he's got 2 days today in Arganil, and we're recording this on the Friday before Portugal. He's spending a lot of time in the car. But, I think Andreas Mikkelsen very, very much underestimated the quality of the competition. Those are very flippant kind of PR sort of statements you throw out there at the start.
Yeah,
of the season.
But he didn't. It wasn't delivered in that manner at all, Colt. You know, it was a considered opinion that, you know, he talked about a lot. You know, he said, you know, he doesn't want to just win. He doesn't. You know, the championship isn't actually that important. He wants to dominate rallies. He wants fastest times. So, you know, he put some thought behind it, and it perhaps was a little bit ill-advised. But just to jump back to another point, you know, we talked about Osberg there. He is spending so much time, probably more time in an R5 car, in a Rally 2 car, than anybody else this year. Does that not make him more relevant for a Rally 1 car next year than any other driver? Because we're back to having no centre diff. We're back to a 5-speed sequential stick shift gearbox. We're down to limited aero. All of that is much more attuned to a driver coming out of a Rally 2 car, isn't it, George?
Well, I think that there's certainly something to be said for that. I think ultimately the speed of the new cars, that last little bit of speed seems to be quite hard to find sometimes, you know, that living out there a little bit quicker. That said, nearly all these drivers we're talking about have made steps all the way through their career and are familiar with that also, that top end. So I don't think any of them would have any difficulty in terms of relevance. Match fitness, R5 helping you to get into WRC2. Well, none of it hinders, that's for sure. I would say that much. Whether it would be a physical help, I'm just trying to put myself. It's an awful long time ago since I was an up and coming young driver. But
here's one for you then, George. Then let's put you in a stage. Say, I don't know, Portugal next year. It's pouring with rain, absolutely lashing it down. It's a 2001 style Portugal, and you're going in there with no centre diff. You know, that's where you know the experience of driving an R5 car would surely help you then, wouldn't it?
It might do. I mean, the simplicity in some ways of driving it. So, I mean, in many ways, it's
the lack of expectation from the car.
Well, I mean, but the car, a constant four-wheel drive car, is in some engineering parlance, you might call it a bit of a tractor, which is disparaging to tractors because they're much more technical than rally cars are these days. even the current rally cars, tractors are incredible if anybody's interested in technology. But the bottom line is they are very, very consistent. And they're not quite spectacular. You know, there'll be a little bit more sideways with them. There's less ability to control some of the attitude altering dynamics of a car. So you're just basically, it'll come in, you know, when you get to a certain speed, it's going to start to go sideways. And if you go a little bit faster, it's going to be more sideways sort of thing. So it's a balance. So yeah, I think it certainly must make the R5 experience and the mileage that people have had in that, it must make it more relevant. Yeah, I mean, it must do. It has to, because that's what the cars are reverting to. So it must be to a great extent, yeah.
I'm going to have to shuffle us along a little bit because we've got two more topics that we want to get in, and all we've managed to do here is highlight the massive problem that M Sport have. We've gone round and round and just thrown a light on how tricky it is.
It would appear they have the choice of about five or six drivers, and none of them would be particularly wrong, but only one of them will be absolutely right.
But don't forget,
none of them might be absolutely right. I'm shuffling this on because we are limited for time. I want to talk about the 100% sustainable biofuel. But before we talk about that, what is this deal that Christian Loriot has done to basically, I don't know, he's got like a job share, or is he working for two teams? Has he gone fully freelance? Welcome to the world of freelancing.
David, what do you know? What do you know, David?
And perhaps you can explain it, because I haven't explained it very clearly there.
So Christian Loriot is the M Sport technical director. He, since 2013, he has focused on the Bentley race side of the M Sport operation. But, you know, just to look back further to what Loriot has done, he started at RAS Sport in Belgium, running Group A Escort Cosworth. He then moved to ProDrive and worked his way up through ProDrive. To become the technical, I guess he was never really technical director, and because obviously Lappy is David Lapworth is technical director, but his one of the finest points for Loriot was that 2001 car. I can't remember which. It was such a massive moment for him. Was it the 2000 car that he? It was the 2000 car, wasn't it? You know, that was the first car that had the lower center of gravity and everything. He then moved to M Sport and delivered that exquisite 2003 Focus. And then, of course, the 2006 Focus, which was the car that delivered Ford's first world championships since 79. So, you know, a great, fabulous engineering brain on him. Sort of turned his back on rallying and went racing from 13. But now is going to spend 2 weeks of every month working at Hyundai Motorsport on, I guess, their 2022 car. It was not a move that I saw coming. Absolutely not. And I do think that absolutely these two things, Oit Tanak staying at Hyundai and Christian Loriot arriving at Hyundai, I think they are absolutely inextricably linked.
Do you think, David, just to interrupt, do you think that Tanak was the instigator of that? 100%. Do you think Tanak said, I'm staying 100%. If you bring Loriot?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It shows the influence that Tanak's got already in that team, doesn't it? Shows how much they want him as well.
Absolutely, it does. You know, if you look back, you know, Loriot and who was Loriot's, you know, essentially his partner in crime in that 2003 car, it was Marco Martin. Mm. The two of them are, you know, they're really, really good friends, and they work incredibly well together. And obviously Marco has a big influence with Oit. Oit worked with Christian at M Sport as well. I definitely think that
it's such a strange situation, because, you know, he's spending, as you say, splitting his time between M Sport and Hyundai. Now, when he goes to M Sport, they're going to have to keep him away from the World Rally Car side of things. Probably not that difficult, but you have to trust the guy. There's a massive amount of trust involved in this deal. Conversely, when he goes to Hyundai's got a burgeoning race car program, a circuit program. You know, how much of the M Sport knowledge potentially might he be bringing to that? Will he be involved in the race car side of things at Hyundai? haven't heard that yet. Maybe not. Maybe he's just there for the rally program. But the whole thing is an unusual, shall we say, situation. I haven't heard of that happening really very often in any form of business. Never mind motorsport. In any form of business, where
it's very odd.
That does happen in journalism. It can happen in journalism where you're working for rival organisations.
Yeah, but equally, you could look at someone like Adrian Newey, and you know he's reached a point where he works sometimes with Red Bull. Then he was working on that on the America's Cup effort, wasn't he? You know, he's done. So I think when you reach a certain level, you know, these opportunities do come. We know, Cole, from being up at M Sport, that you know you can walk in at one end of that evaluation centre into the race car entrance, and you would never see any hint of a rally car. You know, you can lose yourself. It's enormous, that place.
The physical distancing, the physical separation for me isn't the issue. No. I think it 100% relies on trust. Trust from everyone involved, from, you know, who would have been L'Oreal's subordinates at M Sport to the people he's working with at Hyundai. And I think it's a great sign. It's a great sign of the faith that Malcolm has in Christian and that Adamo has in L'Oreal, that they're actually prepared to trust him to do the job as the professional that he quite clearly is. It is odd, but
very odd.
You know what? It's Christian L'Oreal. He's a maverick. He's a different sort of person. He's always been out there, hasn't he? Speaks his mind, does what he wants to do.
There's one thing that I would like to say about, or say to Christian L'Oreal, if he's listening. I'm not sure he's a great fan of the podcast, but if you are listening, Christian, I have to say an enormous sorry for that picture that we used on the website.
It was awful. It was not ideal.
If you've got a better picture, Christian, please send it. And I'm sure you have many better pictures. Please feel free to send them in, and we will post them on Twitter, and we'll use them in our next stories about you, of which I'm sure there will be many. But actually, there won't be many stories where we talk to Christian L'Oreal, will we? Because as M Sport's engineering consultant, Cole, how much access will we, the media, get to Christian L'Oreal?
None whatsoever. Yeah, and fair enough, that's the way they'll play it. You know, there's always Malcolm. Malcolm's always good for a word or two, isn't he?
That's one of my frustrations, is that, you know, we all love Adamo, of course we do. But, you know, we don't get the opportunity to find out too much about the technical side of Hyundai, because Adamo dictates all of the discussion about his team. You know, for very
fiercely protective, fiercely protective of them.
But it is very, very frustrating at times. Mm. You know, that we can go and talk to Chris Williams at M Sport, we can talk to Tom Fowler at Toyota, we get nothing. And you know, I think our readership is left kind of wanting a little bit in that direction. You know, there's a huge number of questions I would love to ask on the technical side. Every time you ask Andrea about them, he reverts you back to January 2019 when he said, "I will not talk about technical matters." Well, that's great, but you know,
we would like whatsoever. We've got just under 10 minutes left before Colin sticks the car in first and takes Harry to school. George,
about 8 would be good.
I'll give you a chance to get your keys, George. The WRC has announced it's going to integrate the hybrid technology by introducing a 100% sustainable fuel. Now, jokingly, we have cut you off when you've started talking about sustainable fuel, but this is right up your strata, isn't it? No, it's clearly not. Yeah.
Up the lot.
No, but you were really interested in this, and you were going to tell us about
super,
it, and we were mean to you, weren't we?
You were absolutely mean to me. That's why I was going in the huff there. Okay, easy for you to edit out, I'm sure. The sustainable fuels, biofuels, call it what you want, fascinating subject. I will not bore you with it for more than 30 or 40 seconds. And then I'll just go silent again. But there are some amazing developments in sustainable fuels, in fuels I don't even understand about, fuels that are made by scrubbing the CO2 out of the atmosphere, combining it with things like, and I've forgotten all the elements that are involved, ammonia and all sorts of things, again, scrubbed out of waste and combined into a liquid fuel that you can currently get experimentally. It's being made experimentally and used with a very similar calorific value to current you know, hydrocarbon fuels, and at the same sort of cost already without it going into massive production. So electric cars, yes, absolutely. George, we're going to see some of them. But,
Before we go on that, George, just explain, when they talk about sustainable, where is it coming from? I'm an absolute.
Well, you know, it'll be grown.
Is it trees? Cow is waste. It plants? Is it what is it? Cow waste?
It tends to be. It tends to be oils. So it can be.
Oils canola
oil. I've heard canola oil.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
Because you plant it every plant year, oils. You grow it, you fertilize it, and it comes around. It's all. The whole planet. You just got to figure one thing out. Everything that's here is here. You know, there's very little extra comes. It did all come at one point. You know, it arrived here and the planet amalgamated. It's all here.
In a closed system.
And it can go around and around. And you think, well, there's got to be a finite limit to that. But there's not a finite limit to it in one sense, because every single day, another celestial body gives us billions of trillions of gazillions of kilowatts of energy every minute of every day, the sun. And that sustains everything and renews it and rebuilds it. And it's just a question of us as humans getting into that rhythm and melding into it so that we don't damage and destroy it. I get very frustrated when I hear about various green protocols and initiatives. And they forget the biggest thing of all is pollution. And pollution, just waste. I mean, of all the things, you know, you might disagree with global warming, you might disagree with X, Y, Z, but the reality is rubbish, waste, plastic in the oceans, you know, waste sites full of rubbish. Actually, we're getting sustainable fuel out of them. Oddly enough, we get gas out of them, which is pumped into people's houses and used as fuel for heating and cooking. But you know, there's a way to get a balance better. And these sustainable fuels are just that, Colin. So they're either grown on an annual basis. Very, very interesting technology to make them. I heard of one university professor I spoke to on one occasion. I met him quite fortuitously in an airport and we got talking about it. And he was from the university of one of the universities, I think it was in Minnesota. And he was telling me that they had these, I think they were 50,000-gallon vats of oil, vegetable oil, that they could add effectively biological organisms to, you know, a nanite, for want of a better word. I don't know what you would call it. And it would go in and it would activate. So you had to raise this first vat up to a particular temperature. I think you had to raise it from whatever it was at. It had to go up to about 35 degrees. And at 35 degrees, all these little organisms activated. And they went through this oil and they changed it. And they changed it from what it was into something that was sustainable as a fuel. And this process didn't even take that long. It was like about 3 days. And it generated more heat. And what happened is it got to the end, the temperature went up. So what they then did was they then pumped it through a heat exchanger, this amount of fuel, into the next 50,000-gallon vat. And they got that next 50,000-gallon vat up to the 35 degrees. And oh, and by the way, as the temperature of the first one drops down, these little microbes, the elements that they added in, and it was something ridiculous like 5 liters. It was, you know, into a 50,000-gallon, it was a gallon of this into 50,000 gallons. They all came back to where they started from. They re-emerged. And you literally took that pot, they all kind of came back to the right place, and they put it into the next one. It sounds like science fiction to me.
Sounds like kombucha.
Except I was assured it wasn't. I have actually spoken to other fuel experts, and they tell me this is kind of how it works. There's various processes that people are trying. Sustainable.
So that's George, one fuel. Last question. We've only got a minute or two left, George, but one last question. That's all fascinating, and I now will go away and do some more work on understanding sustainable fuels. Very quickly, you have a minute to answer this, George. 1 minute, set the timer, Lise. Is this sustainable fuel, is it a viable alternative going forwards for motorsport and combustion engines? Is it something that you think has a future that might mean that we don't have to go down this highly prescribed electric route that everyone seems to imagine we're going down?
Yes, I think there is, Colin. For one simple reason is that the internal combustion engine takes a massive amount of half of its fuel, more than half of its fuel, comes out of the air. It's the oxygen. It's burning oxygen. Oxygen is part of the fuel. So you're only carrying part of the fuel. With an electric car, you're having to carry all of the fuel, which is why they're much heavier and less effective. If we get some big steps in battery storage, there is a great chance. I'm not inside. I'm still inside my minute, and I'm taking an extra 10 seconds for saying that. There is still a possibility that battery technology can make some quantum steps. Lithium technology was a good step, but not that. It was a pretty big step, but not where it needs to be in order to be primary form of transport. Currently, at the moment, all the governments are saying in Britain, they're saying, oh, we'll be all electric by 2030. All electric by 2030. I was down in Ninewells Hospital on Tuesday. I was down there. There are 3 charging stations. There are 2,500 people work there. How on earth are you going to get people to drive into work? And people in hospitals have to work. And the reason I say hospital is because they have to work. Yeah. Right. And do you really want people to spend an extra hour and a half, 2 hours a day getting to and from work? Because people just ain't going to do it. You know, we are expecting rapid transport. This revolution into electric, into sustainable fuel has to maintain that. Otherwise, people will find another solution.
I have to go.
Yes, you're right.
Well done, lads.
you will never get this.
This is good stuff.
You're all so horribly rude.
No, it's really interesting, and I genuinely find it really interesting. David will be putting more and more. He's getting really into the hybrid and biofuel debate massively. So you need to check out dirtfish.com for more on that. More from our fabulous senior staff writer, David Evans, will be there daily. Voice of Rally, Colin Clark, also sometimes contributes stuff, as does George Donaldson, where you really need to get down to the technical precision. And that's where George really thrives on that. Thanks, guys. I've really enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, at Dirtfish Rally on Twitter is perhaps the best way. And we'll be back with another episode of Spin the Rally Pod very soon.
Thanks. Thank you.